This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
After reviewing the play, the call on the ice stands. We got a goal!
Okay, fellas, we are set to go.
Let's go!
We are kicking.
Watch the blue!
Yeah. There we go. Yeah, baby.
Number 47 for Boston. Both guys, 5 minutes each for fighting!
Please move him! Play the play!
And I got to admit, I made a mistake. I think I'm bang on then.
Okay, gentlemen, play ball.
Watch your hair.
Good checking, guys.
Hey, good play.
So this is it, huh? It's really over. There's no more games. We're at the end of the line here.
I don't know what happened. It's just the season just wrapped up. It's over. It's done. No more NHL hockey, Todd. It's a bit of a letdown, and it won't be a letdown for the Colorado Avalanche or their fans for sure. But
oh, no.
But man, I'm missing the puck drops.
It's amazing that you get the culmination of months of work and effort and the big trophy and handshakes and the parade and all the rest of it. And then it says, well, now what? Now what am I going to do for the next couple of months? And it just, there's a real sense of loss at the end of every season.
Yeah, it is. It's just that gap, you know, we get spoiled too. And I love the opening round. It's crazy, but the first round of the playoffs is my favorite couple weeks of the season because you've got so many games every night. Every game's important. And this year, the NHL did a great job scheduling it, whether it had to do with their new broadcast partners, whether Steve Hatzepetros had the time slots lined up, whatever it was. We had a lot of games, and they all happened to fall in that window where you could watch as much as possible. We didn't have that dreaded, like, every game starts at 7 o'clock thing. So it was beautiful. I think I've watched more hockey in those two rounds on a nightly basis, or in the first and second round, than I can remember. But it was a beautiful thing. And that's the most exciting time of the year. And it only goes downhill from there as the games start to dwindle and the series end. And then we have hockey every other night. And it just, it's a big gap. I miss it.
Well, and understandably, and that's going to have to hold you over for a little while. I mean, we'll have the NHL draft coming up, but I'll be watching and everything. But I'm pretty sure there's not going to be any referees drafted this year. I keep holding out hope, but it hasn't happened yet.
Well, it hasn't, but at the same time, it has. And it's always fun to take a look back. And I know we will have it up on scoutingtherefs.com to take a look back, because some of these referees have been drafted. We do have a handful of NHL officials that were selected in the NHL entry draft. Probably the highest being Scott Cherry, second round, 1994 by the Washington Capitals. At the time, he was a speedy winger. Now he's a speedy linesman. So we won't have any drafted as officials. But of the players being selected, some of them may turn out at some point to make the NHL as officials. So always a fun thing to watch. And we'll definitely look back on scoutingtherefs.com. And on draft day, we like to play along and share what round, what position these guys were drafted. So keep an eye out for that, because it is a fun look back. And you realize, you know, don't forget, these guys were, for the most part, while they may have had years as officials, were all pretty competitive players. I mean, they made the transition. Some switched to officiating later, some switched earlier, but we'd have a pretty competitive team, I think, if we could dress an official's hockey team out there. And some of them do it in the offseason, so it'd be fun to watch. But yes, no officials drafted as officials, but some of these guys, some of the players selected this year in the NHL entry draft may one day go on to wear stripes.
If you haven't already determined this, you are listening to the Scouting the Refs podcast. He's Josh. I'm Todd. Make sure you're following us on our social channels. You get Josh, of course, at Scouting the Refs on Twitter and Instagram. For me, it's at Todd Lewis Sports on both Twitter and Instagram. We'll take a quick look back at some of the final periods of hockey. Was it a penalty? Was it not a penalty? And oh, look, it's a bird. No, it's a double bird. Some summertime fun and some other things. And you know, I'm thinking maybe I'm not trying to create work for you, Josh, but thinking with your officials that were drafted. Maybe there's the NHL all-star team of officials that you put together.
That it could be like, is
maybe
awesome.
That's a way to, yeah, maybe it's a way to look back and do those redrafts that people are big on over the summer too.
You know, I think I'm going to steal some thunder here. Sean McIndoe, our buddy over at The Athletic, Down Goes Brown, loves doing those redraft things,
yeah.
or giving himself those difficult challenges of how do you field a team under these parameters. I think we're going to have to test this and see what we can do to make an NHL all-star team of officials. So a gauntlet dropped. Let's do our worst and see what we can come up with. And then we'll see if we can get him to weigh in as well.
Love that. Love that. Okay, Sean, it's up on you at Down Goes Brown to follow him on social media because he's a very funny Twitter follower as well. So you mentioned it, Colorado Avalanche, Stanley Cup champions. Congratulations, a deserving championship team. We go into kind of off-season summer mode now. There's some things that we'll think about and look at and talk about in the next little bit. But I want to go back to the deciding game number 6. There were a few plays, a few questions, a few thoughts and ideas I have about the officiating, the referees, and how the game came together. And as you look through the summary, boy, it doesn't look like there was a lot of work going on between any of the stripes because there were very few penalties called in this one.
Yeah, it was not exactly a whistle-filled game, and it was a bit disheartening. And I know we talked about it last week on the podcast as well, but the playoffs started this year with so many whistles and so many calls made that were keeping it tight, and it was fair, and it was even, and it was, I'd say, a bit more strictly officiated than in seasons past. But as the rounds go on and as the games go on, it started to fall off a little bit. We noticed it in the conference finals, but holy cow, game 6. Were these players really on their best behavior? And I know they tighten things up, right?
No.
They don't. Nobody wants to be the guy who puts your team shorthanded, but did we really only see one penalty per side in the deciding game of the Stanley Cup final? Was it really that clean of a match? I don't think so.
No, and I've got a couple of examples that I want to go over and ask you about. One was involving Pierre-Édouard Bellemare of the Lightning, Josh Manson of the Avs. Just so happens the Avs went up the ice and scored on the play. And, well, isn't that always the way that that happens? But Manson's stick kind of gets caught up in the paraphernalia of Bellemare. Neither referee put the arm up to call a penalty. As I said, there was a goal score, but you know, I'm thinking that if I had seen this play during even an earlier round of the playoffs, let alone the regular season, probably would have been a call on that play.
I think so. And it's one of those tough ones where you're looking at it and you've got guys trying to get that advantage. They're trying to get that call of, well, is there a hook there? Is there a slight contact? Are you chicken winging the stick and holding it against your body to try to draw the call? But this is one of those ones that I don't know. If you want them to let the players play, then this is letting the players play. So I think this was an easy call. I think this is one of those ones that you're blowing the whistle on here because you can clearly see what's happening on the play. But I think, Todd, to be fair to refs Gore Dwyer and Kelly Sutherland, I think their standard for what was being called came down to some real strict advantage on the play, dangerous situation type criteria, and I don't want to defend them on this because I would prefer that this be a whistle, but it was one of those games where I think they called it evenly for both sides. I think this kind of thing was getting let go on both sides of the puck, but maybe called fairly, but not as closely as I would have liked to see.
So it was not called evenly in a sense.
It was yes, the non-calls were even across the board.
Yeah, okay. I think that's probably a pretty fair assessment of how this game was approached.
Yeah, and I think just to add to the Bellemare Manson thing, I think Manson's stick was up there and it's marginal, and maybe they're seeing Bellemare try to draw the call by putting his arm down, and you don't want to send both guys off, and you could put it up there for the hook, you could put him up there for attempting to draw it with the dive or the embellishment there,
or the chicken wing,
you just say you let him go, and at the next whistle, give both benches a heads up and say, I saw what you did there. Manson's stick was up. I saw you trying to get the call. Cut out the nonsense. And that's Kelly Sutherland for you. That's the kind of thing I expect when he communicates with it. So for all I know, that happened. We didn't see it on the broadcast, but it's one of those situations where maybe they looked at it, they saw both sides, and said, you know what, you guys maybe both were close to the line. We're not blowing the whistle. Play on, and that lines up with how it went for the game 6.
And that's probably the difference between a regular season game and a playoff game that has a significant impact on both teams' season moving forward, is that, okay, we could call it, but it's going to offset, and do we really want to disrupt this play rather than, dare I use the phrase, let them play?
Right, and I think, and I hate the let them play idea. I know people like to see players decide the game, and I think you need to call the penalties, because letting them play means letting them play within the rules. And sometimes you have to call the penalty, but you see where your threshold is and you're looking for, did one team get a distinct advantage, or was this a safety issue where it was a dangerous play? And those are the things you're looking for. Outside of that, if it's even, if you're letting both sides get away with the same kinds of things, or you have an offsetting play like this where maybe there was a little bit of a hook, maybe there was a little bit of a draw, you want to let them play and say it was fair, it was balanced, neither team benefited or neither team was put at a disadvantage because of this play, then all right, fine. Now, like you mentioned, though, Todd, of course, a goal was scored on that play, but that's after the fact. You've got to make that penalty decision up front. You can't look at where it goes. And at the time, it seemed like perhaps this was no harm, no foul, no penalty.
Okay, a penalty that was actually called. Ryan McDonagh got two for boarding Darren Helm. First off, are you okay with that call? Was it a 2-minute penalty? Is that accurate?
Yeah, I didn't think it was particularly egregious to deserve more than that. You know, it was deserving of a penalty. It was right through the numbers, one that looked a little scary and potentially worse than that, but we didn't have a serious injury on the play. I don't think it was a particularly aggressive hit into the boards, but no question it was right through the numbers, and you have to call that.
Okay, so after the play is whistled, Steven Stamkos shot the puck at the referee. Now, he didn't wind up and send a headhunter his way or anything, but he did deliberately shoot the puck at the official, and I'm pretty sure that I've seen players penalized for this before. Nothing was called. I suspect, though, it was mentioned, and I don't know, maybe Stamkos was even fined in double secret probation fining ways that the NHL does. But I think that was worthy of some sort of attention.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And it's one of those things that falls under the physical abuse of officials, which we certainly don't want guys to try to get away with there. So a little surprising, first of all, surprising that Stamkos did it, because that's not something that I'd necessarily expect coming from him, to fire the puck at the official. But one of those things that if they chose to, and if they wanted to look at what falls under the physical abuse of officials category, certainly firing the puck at a ref, I would say, is frowned upon, something that you don't typically get away with. And they didn't call anything. So again, this comes down to the call on the ice. And you're looking at what refs Kelly Sutherland and Gord Dwyer saw from the play. And was this directed at them? I mean, the puck was shot at them for sure. But was this something that deserved a penalty? Or are they cutting the guy a little slack given the situation, given that it's game six and what's going on the ice, to not necessarily penalize him for it, but to have that discussion and say, hey, you know, we know you're frustrated, but you can't do that. We're not going to ding you with it now. And I know it can be an automatic suspension. It's technically a category 3. So if you're throwing a stick or object or shooting the puck in the general direction of an official under rule 40.4, it is a 3-game suspension. So that's automatic, but it only happens when the officials call that penalty during the game. So if they call a penalty for physical abuse of officials, it goes in their post-game write-up. They talk about it with the league. And more often than not, if it's penalized during the game, they do enforce that mandatory 3-game suspension. But if they don't call it, the league has the option to go back after and issue a suspension. It's just not mandatory. And it looks like in this case, they're not going to do it. I get it, but you know, you still want to set the right example.
Exactly. I'm going to pause and have a little aside here, because this podcast was curiously interrupted by a technical issue. This is going to sound very smooth as you're listening to it right now, but Josh, for the last 15 to 20 minutes, has been frantically searching to see if the first 13 or so minutes of the podcast actually recorded. He did manage to recover it, and we have now reconnected, and everything is working on. Everything good on your end, Josh? Everything's still fine?
It is, but I can now relate. I have a little perspective on what things must be like for the NHL situation room when a goal is scored and everyone's scrambling and they're looking for the replays, and you know, to John Cooper's chagrin, maybe they don't have it ready in time, but I feel the technical reliance on, we want to get the call right, we want to make this work, and holy cow, you just hope technology doesn't fail you in your time of need.
It'll sound seamless after you put it together. So there is one other thing from Game 6 that I did want to mention that we get refocused here. There was another bit of a fury and some discussion that took place out on the ice as the Bolts were trying to tie the game because there was some thought that there may have been another too many men on the ice call that was missed. Is this something that we could see more discussion of in the offseason? Could we see stricter enforcement next year? Often the league will telegraph something that says, hey, we're going to focus on this. This is not going to get as much leeway as it had. For example, the slashing on the hands, the hooking, restraining calls and the like. Is this something that might get talked about over the summer?
I have to imagine that it's going to come up, whether it's a real situation that they want to address or just the perception of it. You know, you have four officials on the ice and any of them can blow the whistle to call it. But depending on what's going on in the play, you have guys watching the puck carrier. You have the front linesman watching the zone entry. So you've got people looking at different things. They're not all just sitting there counting players. So I understand, but certainly given the importance of the games, given these situations, there's been a stronger, more focused lens put on the too many men call. So where do we go from here? I don't know that you necessarily change the rule. I mean, certainly they could tighten things up and not allow players to step on the ice until their replacement has left. But fundamentally, that's been part of how line changes have gone for years. Sloppy, good, bad, indifferent. That's just part of the game. So where do we fix it? I think if the league wanted to be dramatic and take some drastic action here, maybe they do it with a paint job. And maybe you put that dotted line out 5 feet from the benches for where you're allowed to be when players are changing. And if you have that and a guy's outside the line, maybe you can enforce it more strictly every time. Maybe you can say that, you know what, we saw him. He wasn't over the dotted line when his replacement came on. This is going to be a penalty. But I think without taking some drastic measure to reinvent the rink there and put some additional markings on the ice, which hopefully, Todd, they don't get in the way of the advertisements because heaven forbid. But maybe it's a sponsorship opportunity. Bettman's got us thinking that way now, right? But maybe that's the only way you do it, because I don't think you can really change the interpretation. You don't want to rewrite the rule. There are plenty of rules that need to be rewritten before this one. But maybe that line, maybe knowing where the guy is, maybe that dotted line on the ice could be a possible solution. It'd be a drastic one, and it would make the game look a little bit different out there. But short of a rewrite, I think that's the only thing you really would potentially consider for next season.
Yeah, and you put another line on the ice, you think that might get some video replay scrutiny at some point?
Oh, no, we were going to be replaying it to see if his skate was over the dotted line.
Right, exactly. Okay.
Is it a plane, or does it have to be on the ice?
That's right, yeah. Okay, so there's one other item that I want to get to. In addition to the NHL season being over, the American Hockey League season is over as well. Congratulations, Chicago Wolves winning the Calder Cup championship. Funny thing, though, there appears to be a limit on the kind of expressive celebrations that are allowed when a team wins a championship. Seems that Wolves goaltender Alex Lyon got a little colorful in his interactions with the fans and posing for photos. He not only saluted with one middle finger, but did the full double bird salute. And he's going to find himself suspended for 2 games.
Yeah, it's fun, right? His contract's expired, so he's going to land somewhere. And if it is in the AHL, his new team, or maybe if he re-ups with the Chicago Wolves, his team will have to watch him sit on the sidelines for their first 2 games as he serves his suspension. But okay. All right. It's unsportsmanlike. I get it. But holy cow, Todd, and it was in front of the visiting fans. So yeah, I think the message was clear there. We've seen guys get far, far lesser suspensions for nearly beheading opposing players out there. We've seen dangerous hits. We've had scary moments. We've had deliberate, I don't know, a cross check to the ankle or a slash up high or some violent stick work that hasn't garnished quite as much punishment as 2 digits elevated.
This is true, but this is a I don't know, what do you call it? A public relations suspension. I mean,
sure.
You can't have your players behaving in this manner. I mean, sure, it's emotion and everybody's jacked up on adrenaline with the final and the championship being awarded and stuff. And doesn't matter what kind of abuse or insults or whatever were sent your way. You can't have that as a response. That's unacceptable.
No, I agree with that. And I know from a league standpoint, the AHL has to show that they're taking action here. But man, what a silly way to end your championship. And I saw it go up and said, whoa, oh boy, I didn't expect to see 2 games for it. I figured we'd be in line for a fine. But the AHL coming down hard, sending a message. And you know what? I'd love to say that this will be received and Alex Lyon will learn a lesson, but he just won the Calder Cup championship. I don't think he cares at this point.
Yeah, probably not.
Hey, just a quick side note there, Todd, as we're talking the AHL, you know, congrats to the officiating crews who handled the AHL's Calder Cup final, all made up of NHL, AHL officials. Nice crew there, a nice audition, if you will, during the series to see, because we do have a few job openings at the NHL level. We've had retirements this year, Dean Morton, Brad Meyer, Marc Jeanette, and Vaughn Rohde. So there are some possible openings at the NHL level, and you'd have to think that for the guys working the AHL's Calder Cup final, this may have been a good audition for them to make their case for a promotion to the show next year.
Well, this is kind of where I wanted to wrap up this edition of the podcast. First, congratulations to Emily Engel-Natsky, who's just been hired as the video coordinator for the Washington Capitals. It's the first full-time female coach for the Washington Capitals, and we have seen women hired in other positions for other teams, be it assistant general managers or coaches or in player development. And NHL, we are waiting for you to sign up that first female official.
Hey, we've got the door opened, right? We're following the path that these officials take, and 100% of the referees, 97% of NHL linesmen have come through the AHL. So if we see 3 refs and a linesman get promoted that are currently splitting time between the leagues, then one would imagine that opens the door for 3 referees and 1 linesman to fill those gaps and split time between the AHL and NHL. And the AHL made a big splash this season. They have 7 women refereeing, 3 women on the lines. Is this the first time we see one of them move up? The door is open, and it's been amazing to see the opportunity they've had. And I'd say from the games we've seen, they fit right in. It hasn't been a situation where you go, oh, these women look out of place. Not at all. Some of the strongest skaters out there, and certainly asserting themselves on the ice, and the players have handled it as if it were any other referee or lines person. So I think you have to say it's been a success in the AHL. And now as opportunities present themselves, is it this year? Is it next year? But the door's open, and it's up to the NHL, like you said, Todd, to now we have coaches, we have special coaches for the teams. Is an official next? And I think we're getting close.
Well, you said the door is open, so there's no need to go over the boards early.
Thanks for listening to the Scouting the Refs podcast. Be sure to follow us on social media at Scouting the Refs on Twitter and Instagram, and follow Todd at Todd Lewis Sports on Twitter and Instagram. Make sure you like and subscribe to the podcast. Thanks again for listening. Stay safe out there. Keep it clean. Watch the elbows. We'll see you back out there on the ice.